You're listening to CJMQ 88.9 FM. Today we're talking with Professor Gilbert Gagné of Bishop's University, the Department of Political and International Studies, a specialist in lumber trade and I guess in trade and politics in general.
That's right.
Yeah. So welcome to CJMQ.
Thank you very much. Thanks for inviting me.
Well, you know, it's really a treat for us to have someone who knows politics to talk to us at this time. Things in politics are a little bit interesting right now, aren't they?
Certainly.
Yes, with the election of Donald Trump, surprising election of Donald Trump.
Indeed.
Wasn't predicted.
No, not at all.
And the anxieties that come from that, also maybe an inside view of how you feel about that whole thing, starting with the debates. I mean, the debates were pretty interesting themselves. I know that I didn't miss a single one, and I was just glued to the television watching the debates.
To be honest, I didn't watch the debates because I found them too unbearable, particularly the tone of Mr. Trump. I tried to be a pragmatic person. I knew the kind of person he was, his abrasive tone, the many irrational things he used to say. And so I thought, this guy is just unbearable. So I just couldn't watch. And I know also the political debates, it's more of a show.
Yes.
They're told by their spin doctors, that is their communication advisors, how to behave, what to say. And I studied communication, so I have grown impatient with this. So to be honest, I didn't watch the debates, but I listened to what came out of the debates the following day. And I was at first reassured that people thought that Donald Trump had behaved outrageously, had lacked respect, contradicted himself all too often, while on the other hand, Mrs. Clinton showed that she was competent, that she could control herself, and these are usually the qualities you look for a head of state. So I think people were pretty confident that Donald Trump wouldn't have a chance.
To tell you the truth, that's why I watched the debates, was to, I guess, kind of reassure myself and make myself feel better that the more he made himself a buffoon, I thought the less likely he would be to get elected. And even Saturday Night Live did a little skit about the debates, and at one time the actress playing the part of Hillary Clinton, they asked her, well, what do you think? She says, I think I'm going to be president. So I thought that was pretty cute. And I thought, yeah, the more he says, the more he talks, the worse it gets for him. But whoa, what a surprise for all of us. He managed to win. I don't. Maybe he's right. Maybe the election is rigged.
But it cannot, because it was in his favor.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it's always one-sided argument, always in his favor.
Yes, yeah. And it was rigged while he was losing in the polls. And then when he started winning in the polls, well, then it's not rigged anymore. And now we don't hear anything about rigged elections from
him. Of course not. But I'm sure we would have heard a lot about this. I remember when for months, if not for more than a year, he claimed that President Obama couldn't be president because he wasn't born in the United States.
Yes.
That was more than harassment.
It was. I don't know how he got away with that.
Exactly. This is unacceptable that he has managed to get away with outrageous things, outrageous behavior and comments he has said, while you know others would have said only one-tenth of what he had said and would have been ostracized and put away for the rest of their lives.
Do you have any idea why he gets away with everything? This is something I've been asking myself for years now, because this birther thing has been going on for years. And I'm wondering, how does he get away with all these? People make excuses for him.
Yes.
But why? I mean,
I've been thinking of two things recently. I've been thinking that Fox News and all their tone and horrible comments in the name of freedom of speech in the United States, such channels have been left spreading their hatred, their lies, their stereotypes about people and politicians with impunity. And now I think we are realizing the damage that this could do, even in a mature democracy, where, as we have just mentioned, we thought people could make sense out of this and not take everything for what had been said. And another reason, and I think he was advised by some people around him, and he has a good sense of communication himself. There is a distrust, a profound distrust of government in the United States. And now it has extended to the so-called establishment. And he played extremely well on that resentment. And for whatever reason, that allowed him to get away with all the outrageous things and lies he had said. But he kept criticizing the government, the establishment, and he came up with easy solutions to serious problems. And when things go bad in countries, people look for candidates with easy solutions.
Yeah, the simplistic answer that really doesn't answer anything. It'll be very interesting to see what happens. My own feeling was, when I heard that he was going to win the election, first of all, I was very dismayed. And then after that, I thought to myself, well, you know, one of two things is going to happen. Either he's going to be one of the best presidents they ever had. Not likely, in my opinion, but that's one way it can go. Or the other way is that he'll be impeached within the first year. Those were the two feelings I had. And I don't see how people could vote for him, but I guess they voted for change, a lot of people said, not realizing perhaps that things can get a lot worse instead of a lot better. Change isn't always good.
Exactly. Of course, the victory is very thin. He has got less of the popular vote, so he's not in a particularly strong position in this regard. And his relationship with the Republican Party, he isn't good either. And we have to recognize that the obsession of the founding fathers of the United States was to prevent tyranny. So he has to compose, to deal with Congress, a Republican-dominated Congress, and again, in which he has, I think, not that many friends. Now, the big unknown right now is the team of people he will surround himself with. We all remember George W. Bush, whom in retrospect, as we suspected, wasn't a strong president. So he had strong characters around him, like his vice president Dick Cheney, his Secretary of Defense Donald Rumsfeld, and these people, to a great extent, ran the show. So now it's a big unknown right now who he will appoint around him. My guess is that we could at least hope that these people will be more moderate than what might be apprehended, because first, there is still strong protest on the part of Americans absolutely dismayed that someone like that can be elected in a civilized country.
Yes, exactly.
And this has come as a shock.
As a big shock.
And secondly, since he will have to deal with Congress, he will have to compromise on many issues. And I think what has been reassuring so far, notwithstanding, as I have just mentioned, the people he will appoint key posts in the government, will be, it is that he has already compromised and showed a desire to work cooperatively with Congress and has made his acceptance speech was conciliatory. He sought for once, I mean, what a change to be the president of for all Americans. So it remains to be seen. We hope that it will continue to improve. But between you and I, it's difficult to imagine how it could get worse.
Well, looking at the people he's already appointed, the signs aren't good. Because he's appointed, I think his name is Bannon, a very controversial figure. He's appointed a couple of other people who are also very controversial. And the other thing that strikes me, as you were mentioning, that he has a weak mandate because he doesn't have the popular vote. The other thing that strikes me about that is, as you said, the lack of support within the Republican Party itself. But then the third part of that equation is the people who voted for him. So he's now losing faith with them as well, because all of a sudden the wall becomes a fence in parts, and people maybe aren't going to be as deported as they thought it would be. And it's as detestable as that may sound, a lot of people voted for him for the simple joy of thinking that their neighbor might be deported. That's my feeling I get. And I get some more than a feeling. I mean, when you're running around with signs saying, you know, build the wall and stuff like that, it's more than a feeling. I can allow myself to say, yeah, that's what they wanted when they voted for him. Not everyone, but a good part of the people who voted for him. So if he loses on all three fronts, I mean, isn't that going to be very difficult for him?
It will be extremely difficult because on the one hand, if he goes too far, he might be impeached. And if he doesn't go far enough for those who supported him, he will lose support. So he must be trying to find a good compromise and at the same time trying to be sort of accepted by most Americans. But on the other hand, I mean, he played on hatred,
yes,
intolerance, and now it's difficult to imagine how he could reconcile the so-called two Americas that he has sort of created, an America of intolerance, hatred, easy solution, and an America that we used to know for its openness, its tolerance, its liberalism. So we will see how it goes.
Yeah, it's going to be very, very interesting. I can really feel sorry for a lot of people in the United States, but also maybe we should feel sorry for ourselves as well. How will this affect Canada with his presidency going forward with the ideals that he has?
He has I'm a trade specialist, so I know that in regards to trade, he has been extremely protectionist in tone. But on the other hand, the Democrats traditionally have tended to be even more protectionist. Oh. So on trade, there is electoral rhetoric on the one hand and political reality on the other. I shall remind you that President Obama threatened to reopen the NAFTA. He never did. And for what I understand, Trump doesn't have strong feelings against Canada. For what I heard from the trade people in Washington is that trade isn't going to be his priority. So with regard to trade agreements and trade negotiations, it remains to be seen. But so far, he's announced that it's more immigration and labor that are going to be his priorities. But here again, we don't know for sure because there is a lot of uncertainty. He has already mentioned that he intends to preserve some elements of the Obamacare.
Yeah, so he's going back on everything he's saying. I'm just wondering how long it's going to be before there's a backlash, before the people in the street are the ones that voted for him instead of the ones that voted for Clinton.
On the other hand, there is a substantial number of people who voted for him knowing full well that he wasn't going to implement all that he had said. And I think in particular of the Latinos in the United States, towards whom he was intolerant. And at the same time, they thought, oh, no, that's just for the electoral show. He doesn't really mean it. It's strange to understand sometimes how electors think. But you're right, there is a segment, we hope, as small as possible within the U.S. population, who I think really thought that he was going to do all that he said he was going to do during the electoral campaign.
That's another part of it that amazed me, was how quickly people who supported his positions and claimed that they voted for him turned right around and said, oh, of course he didn't mean that, and of course he didn't. You know, maybe the United States is developing a sense of humor when it comes to voting like Quebec has had for decades, and voting for separatist parties and then not supporting them for separation. Maybe there's that kind of sense of humor is coming into American politics. I don't know, but it's very interesting. A thing that also really confused me about Donald Trump is this man has everything. Mm-hmm. Apparently, he hasn't released his tax returns, but apparently he's not hurting for money. And I kind of wondered about his motives for wanting to be president. I mean, going to the White House, it's an old building, and he lives in a penthouse. He has a lifestyle that really surpasses that of any president. So I wondered about his motivations.
I think when you think of megalomaniacs in the past, they love power and prestige.
Yes.
Aristotle Onassis in the 1960s, when he left Maria Callas to marry Jacqueline Kennedy. I mean, what an honor for him to marry the popular widow of the late president of the most powerful country in the world. Oh. So you can make a parallel with Donald Trump. He wanted more prestige, more adulation. I mean, it's kind of narcissistic personality disorder that many people think he suffers from.
Yeah, that's a good point. It's really baffling, though.
I'm not a psychologist, but that's my personal explanation for why he wanted to become president, because it's hard to see what he could really bring to the United States in terms of brains.
It is very difficult to see what he could bring. I also wonder about what he could take, because he was very quick to say that when he avoided paying federal taxes, that that made him smart. And because he stayed within the legal confines, supposedly, of what the tax laws that were written, he said they were poorly written. What is he going to find that is poorly defined about the presidency that he can take advantage of? What little loopholes can he find within the presidency that he can hook onto? That's kind of disconcerting.
Well, there was a time in the 1960s when the presidency became more powerful vis-a-vis the U.S. Congress. We called it the imperial presidency. And after the Watergate and the resignation of Richard Nixon in 1974, ever since, Congress has reasserted its prerogatives vis-a-vis the executive. And he may want to strengthen the presidency, but at the same time, it may lead to a backlash with Congress. So here again, he will have a very difficult and delicate game to play.
Yes.
And he has no experience playing politics. He used to be a businessman. And in the business world, you could make a parallel with Pierre-Carl Perladeau in Quebec. I mean, you're accustomed to do what you want. You're not much accountable to anyone. And now where you are in politics, it's a completely different game. So I think he will have to be a quick learner if he wants to be efficient.
Right. So do you have any predictions about how his presidency will go? Or any thoughts or feelings, maybe? Because it's pretty hard to tell. Everything's been unpredictable about him so far.
Precisely. I avoid making predictions. We always make them at our own risk.
Exactly.
I'm like any people of goodwill in the United States, in Canada, and in the rest of the world. I hope for the best, that he will come to his senses, that he will appoint people who behave responsibly and who have at heart the best interests of the United States. And the best interests of the United States within recent history has tended to coincide with the best interest of humankind. And let's hope it continues to be like that.
Well, you know, those are very good hopes and thoughts. And I think you pivoted very well. We've been talking with Professor Gilbert Gagné. He's a professor at Bishop's University, the Department of Political and International Studies, specialist in trade and the lumber trade. And I thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you, Mr. Teasdale.